Hello and welcome to the Building Tech Teams podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to hiring experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you and enjoy the show. Cool, rolling. Awesome, we've got CK Sample here. He is the CTO at Hypergiant Space Age Solutions, coming to us from Austin, where unfortunately he seems to be suffering from some allergies. Hopefully we can battle through. Right, so under the circumstances, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, no problem. Happy to be here.
Before we get started with the conversation, we're just hoping that if you could give the listeners a bit of a brief overview of, you know, some of your background and experiences, if that's okay.
Cool. Yeah, no problem. So I'm the CTO of Hypergiant Space Age Solutions, as Andy mentioned, and Hypergiant is a multi-company company. So my division, Space Age Solutions, we do AI solutions for Fortune 500 companies. And but we're part of Hypergiant Industries, which is a larger parent company. And we also have a Galactic Systems branch that focuses on space and actually launches satellites into space. And we're Texas-based, but we have people in Seattle and all over the world, actually. Like, we have a nice distributed team, which is one of the topics I think we're going to talk about today. I myself have been working in startups for over 15 years. I got my start back in the Weblogs Inc. days in early 2000s, working for Jason Calacanis and Brian Alvey when they built Weblogs Inc. Weblogs Inc. was the blogging network that was running alongside Gawker back in the day. And we built that company. I was just a contributing blogger at the time, but I was proficient and prolific in the network, blogging for a bunch of the different sites. Like, I was the lead blogger for the Unofficial Lab Weblog, contributed to Cinematical, TV Squad, Engadget, a bunch of sites. AOL bought us in 2005, and a bunch of people started getting jobs at AOL. And Jason Calacanis, who's the CEO, he took a chance on me because I hadn't had much experience in this scale of work, and let me be the general manager of Netscape.com. And all of a sudden I was running a team of 8 developers and 8 editorial staff building a social network on Netscape.com, and did that for a couple of years, and then followed him over to Mahalo.com, which has since changed to become Inside.com. Was there for a couple of years, but didn't enjoy LA. I had to move to LA for that. And my wife and I decided to move back to New York, where we were based at the time. And then I worked for a company called CrowdVision. We did a CMS platform that powers TMZ to this day, but we had customers like TMZ, News Corp. We built the backend systems of The Daily, which was the first iPad publication regularly using that newsstand and everything that Rupert Murdoch launched back in 2011. Awesome. And while I was working on that project, I met Ben Lamb, who's the CEO of Hypergiant, and he, like Chaotic Moon, his company at the time, was building the front-end application for News Corp's The Daily, and my team, CrowdFusion, was building the CMS that powered everything. And so we worked closely together in that environment. And you know, my company, we bought another company and kind of shifted focus, Saros, which is run by Simon Berg, and they're still going gangbusters today and doing great work. And I kind of became less necessary to the core business because of the shift we had done. And I was looking for new opportunities, and Ben said, hey, why don't you come work for me at Chaotic Moon? And so I came to Chaotic Moon and helped build up that company, helped hire a bunch of engineers and grow it. And then we sold that company to Accenture in 2015. You know, best intentions and everything, it didn't end up as ideally as we had hoped the acquisition would end up. I ended up leaving probably about 9 months after the acquisition. I went and I was chief product officer for a company called You Earned It for about 2.5 years. I helped them grow. I led a redesign of their application, and we won an award for HR software redesign. And it was a software platform all about giving recognition to your coworkers and the power of positive reinforcement in the workplace, and how that can create more efficiencies in the workplace and make people happier at work and make people work better and do better results for companies. So, we sold that company to Vista Ventures, and it's since rebranded as Kazoo and is still going strong. And, I was a couple of months into the post Vista, life at You Earned It. Yeah. And Ben reached out again and said, hey, so we're doing something similar to what we did at Chaotic Moon, but now we're doing machine intelligence and artificial intelligence, and I want you to come over and do it. And I thought, oh, this is a much bigger market than HR software market. So and I felt like I kind of helped You Earned It get to a certain spot. So I left there and came on board at Hypergiant about Space Age Solutions about 2 years ago, and I've been, really enjoying it since, growing the team. We grew from, I think when I joined, we were at 37 people, and now we're at about 220, 230, something like that, just within the Space Age Solutions division of the company. And that's a mix of salespeople, designers, strategists, project managers, developers, all kinds of developers. And while there's a lot of us in Austin, there's a pocket of us in an office in Dallas as well. There's probably about a group of us in Houston and a group of us in Seattle who have some co-working space they work out of. The majority of the company is fully distributed. And that's one of the things that I've been doing. Like all of the companies that I mentioned have either been fully remote, like in the Weblogs Inc. days, there was no home office. Netscape, even though we had an office downtown for with AOL, we were often out of the office and working remotely. And Chaotic Moon and Hypergiant are both what I call hybrid companies, where you have multiple physical locations where people work that have their own culture and microcultures, and then you have a lot of people that are working out of their home offices, and you have to maintain team cohesion and a cultural through line while allowing there to be room for all the little micro cultures that can develop in those different type of scenarios. And a lot of it's all about focusing on really good communication and knowing how to use the digital tools that are at your hands to really help people work better together.
It's really compelling. I was just making a few different notes there. Obviously, I definitely want to get your opinion on distributed team, because I think it's such an interesting topic for so many reasons. But before that, like, it seems as though, just to go back to your career and how you progressed through it, you've always managed to end up on some really compelling and, from the timeline that I could try and gather, very relevant projects. Yeah. How do you feel that you kind of managed to do that and navigate yourself through the various projects as effectively as you have? Have you got any advice for us laymans out here?
I think I don't want to over-index on hard work, but hard work's important. Like, I think, and the reason I say I don't want to over-index on it is because I think if you don't know how to manage your own stress, if you don't know how to manage what you're actually capable of, then hard work can become a burden, and there can be the idea of like, oh, I have to work hard, and it's hard to work hard, and hard work doesn't have to be hard. Hard work can be very fun and energizing, if you know what your limits are. And it's one of the things that I talk a lot about with like more newer entrants to the workforce, like brand new graduating students that we may hire as interns or people who've only been working in for a couple of years in a job. Like there's, it's very easy, especially when you're building really cool, amazing products and you have a lot of customers and you're building, and there feels like there's a lot on the line, and like, oh my God, how do I do all this? But the worst thing you can do is not, you know, listen to what you're actually capable of right now and know, and try to do more than what you can do. Cause I think a lot of people, you know, will overburden themselves with work and not communicate out to the rest of their team, to their managers. You know, they'll have one-on-ones every week and they may not say, I'm feeling really overloaded right now, you know. And a lot of managers are very busy and doing a lot of different things, and they're addressing the squeaky wheels, you know, in the business, and they're trying to you know, streamline things and fix things, and they may not be aware or see whatever challenges you're facing. So the more vocal you are in a positive, you know, hey, I'm having difficulty doing all these things. We need to figure out a better way to do this. I'm happy to brainstorm that, you know, being very proactive, being positive, being hardworking in that context, I think has been the key to my success. I've always been I think for a while at CrowdFusion, my title was, it was never on a business card, but my title was vice president of getting shit done. Just because that's always been my approach. I try to dive in and figure out how I can help and make things better with a positive attitude, and I work really hard to do it. And sometimes that means you're doing something uncomfortable that you've never done before, and you're teaching and learning about it. And I think everybody in the workforce wants to do a good job. There's very few people in the world who don't want to have a job that they enjoy, that don't want to feel like they're a positive contribution to what's going on. And often, like, I think people misunderstand other people in the workforce who are having difficulties with things, or have, you know, maybe systemic constraints in the business that are preventing them from actually excelling. And paying attention to that, trying to solve problems and being positive about it versus, oh, this goes so much work. It's so much hard work. You know, I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of hard work. Let's have fun. Let's solve this. This is a great challenge. Let's figure out how to build a better whatever. You know, that's been the way I've always approached everything. And I'm, I don't know. I think some people think I'm too intense and, I'm a lot of chilled out in my older years. I used to be way more intense than I am now.
Yeah, no, I think there's something to that. I think the one danger I tend to find with, you know, you can see these kind of, I don't know what to even call them, like, you know, there's a book and stuff at the moment, like Great Habits and all this kind of propaganda and motivational videos and all this kind of stuff that I find a bit, like, I think, exhausting. And I think it can be a negative thing if it's a conscious thought process is that I must work hard. And instead of, like, actually creating actionable steps for yourself to work hard and implement things, people, I think, just sit there building up anxiety thinking, I need to work harder, I've got to build better habits. So I think that obviously when you're talking very candidly, it makes total sense to say these things. But I always like to kind of make that point because I find it really unhealthy, these kind of people who, you know, are on the blogs and on the podcasts and stuff and just like preaching work hard, you know, you gotta live it, you gotta want it, and all this kind of stuff. But I just think it's super unhealthy because I think it's not digestible information to be able to take and actually action. So I just think it generates anxiety and a sense of underaccomplishment because you're sat there going, I'm not doing it. And I think that, you know, it's just a point I like to raise because I think it can be very confusing. And I think, you know, what you're saying is very different, I must add, than this. But I just think that there is a fine line between that level of advice.
Well, I think people over-index on the work hard part of it. Like, in my mind, working hard that's table stakes. You know, that's of course you're going to work hard. You're being employed, you're being paid, you want to do good work, you're going to work hard. You know, like that's, and some people will say that person works so hard, and they can be a very inefficient person who's, you know, not a good fit for the company, causing problems for other people, and they shouldn't be there because they're causing problems from the overall flow of what the company is trying to do. And that, when I say that, I mean, they shouldn't be there. I'm not saying necessarily get rid of them, but I'm saying, like, maybe they belong in a different spot. Maybe we need to restructure the and that's what my job is. Like my job and, you know, a management team's job is to look at the business and understand and try to figure out where you need to fine tune everything. One of the things you just said about, like, you know, all the different things that all the structures that are in place, the mantras of how to work hard and how to do, you know, get up at 5 a.m. every morning and whatever. I hate all that stuff. Like I think it can be useful as training wheels to get you to the place where you need to get to work hard the way you work hard, you know, the way that's best for you. But the fact of the matter is that while people are all genetically very similar and we're all the same species, and you know, for the most part, there's not that much that separates the way my life works from anybody who's listening to this. At that same time, we're all very unique too, and we all have different communication styles, and there are different personality types out there, you know, like, you know, Myers-Briggs, for example, you know, like, and alongside all that, there's a lot of different communication styles, and there's a lot of other work styles. So certain processes that may be very efficient for some people can be horrendously burdensome for other people. And I think, you know, one of the things that, I always talk about is how we don't want to over-index on process. We do want to have process with, I always say, we want to have process with a little p. We want to have a structure that works, that helps us excel and do what we need to do, and, you know, and get the hard work done, and it to be as efficient and trackable as possible. However, we want to break those rules. Like, all the rules in the world are simply, you know, actually, there are no real rules, you know, like everything's all about consequences, choices, decisions, and consequences. And if you're trying to build a business and you're trying to build your career and you're trying to succeed, you know, you need to follow the rules, but you need to also, you know, creatively think about times when, you know what, I don't need to follow this process. I need to do this other thing because that will get the job done. That will make this move forward, and I'll be happier doing it this way, and the business will be more successful and happier doing it this way. You know, I think there's something to be said for how we as humans try to label everything and put compartments around it, and life's much fuzzier than that. And there's a lot more room for amazing creativity when you start looking at the world through the lens of, how do I use these two things in ways they weren't supposed to be used to do something better? You know, and that's one of the things I'm always trying to challenge my teams and myself to do at each consecutive business is how do we do this better? Yeah, I know that Agile does everything this way, and that's the current way that Agile does this. I like Agile. Like, Agile's a, you know, we practice Scrum on our projects, but how can we improve on Scrum? How can we improve on the processes and the frameworks and the things that we have adopted? How can we do them better? Should we always do them, you know, in the tried and true way? You know, it's things like, you know, we've been discussing a lot about org charts, and because we've been growing so fast, it's hard to keep an up-to-date org chart. And I've actually been talking to the team about, I'd rather have an organizational responsibilities chart that says what all we do and where people can work on things. And that gives us the flexibility for people to move to different areas. And an org chart is really something that arose in the Industrial Revolution and was used to determine who the least valuable people in a company were, so that when money got too tight, how do we cut them and get rid of them? And I don't want to work that way. I want to work on how do we build the ship together and sail it while we're building it and make it the most successful thing as possible, and hopefully keep anyone from falling overboard or having to make anybody walk the plank.
So, like I was alluding to earlier on in the conversation, distributed teams, I think there's so many different challenges with that. You know, a lot of the discussion that we were talking about earlier was, you know, how complicated that can be with various teams, team dynamics. But, you know, I think that adds another layer to things when you look at distributed teams. I know it's something, obviously, you've been outspoken about, you know, you've obviously had a ton of experience with it. So what different dynamics and layers of complication does distributed teams add? And maybe, you know, I'm sure there's obviously a lot of positive reasons for it as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I recently gave a lunch and learn to our company about this because we've grown a lot and there's some people who have never worked in a distributed environment before. And like I said, like I started out my career with Weblogs Inc. Like there was no Slack back when we were doing Weblogs Inc. We were using IRC and Skype and, you know, I used to, and at Netscape, I used to have, actually, it wasn't my my thing. It was Tom, who's my head of engineering. He would actually have the developer meetings inside World of Warcraft because there wasn't really good audio support on over IP in a lot of scenarios for chat. There wasn't Skype wasn't great yet, you know, but it worked really well in video games. So they would actually, you know, they all played World of Warcraft. So the scrum team would get together and plan everything in World of Warcraft using, I forget the name of the app they had that was a talk over it. But anyway, so I've been doing this a lot and I think about it a lot. And a lot of it is really about helping people who are, helping people who work in offices all day long realize, the weird barriers that you stick in your head when you're working with people who are remote. And it's a two-way street. Most people who work remote have been doing it for a while, know how to do it, know all the pitfalls and are used to being their own IT team. You know, there's a lot of logistical things you have to do if you're going to work remote. Like if you have a family and you're working out of a home office, you have to establish clear rules with your family so that they're not bursting in while you're in the middle of something. And it's difficult, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, so the amount of consciousness about being a remote worker, I think is much higher than the amount of consciousness for somebody who works in an office, about the people that they're working with that are remote and the empathy, tends to disappear sometimes in that scenario. And it's largely because genetically we're not geared for any of this. Like, you know, genetically, forever, we've been keyed to understand what we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we taste, what we touch, you know, like we're keyed to understand people's facial expressions. Like we're keyed to understand the tone of voice that people are using. We're keyed to understand the body language people are using when they're talking to us face to face. So even a call like the one you and I are having right now, Andy, is something where there's a certain amount of information that we're used to getting genetically as humans that's missing. And so you on your end of it and me on my end of it, we're both, our brains are filling in the gaps there. So a lot of my, a lot of what I talk about when I talk about this is all about that gap that exists. And it's the same gap that your brain does when, you know, and this is from Scott McCloud, who's, he's a graphic novelist. He did Understanding Comics. He has a great TED talk about this topic, but he talks about how, like, when you get in a car and you put your hands on the steering wheel and you drive it a few times, your mind has already mapped what the physicality of that car is and how far it is from you to the front bumper. And that's what allows us to be able to drive. You know, like, we do a lot of really crazy computational physics just to throw a ball, you know, and that's, but we don't even think about it because it's genetically programmed into us. And so in the absence of that information, your brain sticks other things in there. And the thing that's interesting with what's been happening in technology, I think, in the past two decades is, you know, as we've gotten the internet and we've started communicating with other people and there's some sort of communication, it's still in text, and text is, for as fast as we can all type and as fast as some of us can read text, we are not genetically geared to understand text. And so we're reading emotion and we're reading extra information into everything that we read in a textual communication.
I do want to underscore, like, presence is important. Like, you know, even in a distributed team scenario, like, ideally we try to have the people we're working with come and visit us, you know, or meet together. Every opportunity you have in a distributed team for the team to get together is valuable, because it creates moments and bonds of people actually having all those connections where you see each other's faces, you connect a name with that person, you see, oh, you know, Pam's a great person that I can reach out to, and she's very helpful, so I should call her up on the phone whenever I need help with this sort of thing, or I should reach out to her even though she's remote in the middle of wherever. Also, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Like, there are scenarios where presence is vital. You know, I think project kickoffs, like working together as a team in the same place can be very valuable. Small startups, like if you've never built the foundations of a culture, because a culture always kind of builds itself based on the people that you hire. But if you've never gotten that alignment with a team before, it's invaluable to have a small team, early startup, all in the same place sitting together. And even if you're planning on having a very distributed workforce because you found five people that are distributed across the world who want to build something new, I would recommend investing early on a trip where everybody's together in the same place working for at least a week, 2 weeks. Do it semi-regularly if you're doing that, because that will give you the alignment and synchronicity that'll help you succeed throughout the project or the startup, you know. And we used to do back in the fully remote company days when we were doing Netscape and Weblogs Inc., the development teams would have regular weeks where they'd get together and just hack things together and make and do a lot of progress of against the code base, where everybody got together, everybody coded more than usual, worked more hours, and then also went out and went bowling together, or went and saw a movie together, and did social things together, and spent that time really building the team and the camaraderie that's necessary to really execute well as a team. And that's super important in whatever context. It's just, you can't forget people who are remote when you're trying to do that. You can't leave them out of it and just say, you know, one important thing, if you are starting to get into distributed teams, if you're starting to have remote workers in your business, one important thing is to make all the remote people aware of all the things that are going on in the office. I know there's a tendency to think, well, I don't want them to know that we're having a social at 4 p.m. on Friday because I don't want them to feel left out. Well, if you don't want them to feel left out, invite them to it and set up a video call so they can witness it and participate in it remotely, because that'll make them feel more connected if they want to attend and if they have the time to do that. And also, it'll let them know where everybody went at 4 o'clock on Friday when they were still trying to get answers to questions. Because if you don't communicate that sort of thing, they're like, where did everybody go? Why am I the only one working? And if that kicks in, that's what starts building the distrust between people, because it's that presence. It's the lack of a presence, the lack of an understanding of what is happening that's making it difficult for the communication that they are looking for right then in that instance.
Out of curiosity, I know that obviously, you know, you did a bit of a workshop, a bit of lunch and learn kind of thing on the subject of distributed teams as well. Just before we kind of come towards the end of the conclusion here, what was the general, like, was that great? Well, first of all, was that a good learning experience? And secondly, what was the kind of, like, I suppose the typical questions that were coming in with, you know, perhaps people's concerns or people's plaudits, or what were some of the ones that stood out to you?
I was like really nervous at the end of the lunch and learn because there weren't that many questions, but I think that's because our team has actually been working in a distributed fashion for a while, so it wasn't foreign to them. But it was well received. I've received a lot of feedback since the session of that was really good. I really love that. We should have that on onboarding for all new hires, you know, stuff like that. So, and a lot of people, especially people who work remotely, like fully remotely, not in an office, are used to that, know how to do it, and they know the pitfalls from their end of it, because you have to be your own IT team, you have to be your own office, you have to be all those things to yourself. It's part of the exchange for the convenience of it is you have to actually show up and be be at a level of preparedness for communications that the rest of the team relies on, you know, the speaker in the room when you show up working, you know, like that type of thing. So they know that, but like a lot of the people that were in the office were like, you know, I never really thought about, it was really interesting how you talked about how genetically, like, we can process an image in microseconds and reading text is more difficult for us no matter what. And we're filling in all these emotional and whatever context gaps that we don't have in digital communications because we're not hearing a voice or we're not seeing a face. And that's why picking up the phone and having a Google Hangout or a Zoom call or anything that's closer to the approximation of actual face-to-face is valuable because there's an extra layer of communication happening there that helps fill in those gaps. That seems to be something that really resonates with people when I talk about this. And I've done this talk before. I did it once when I was a chief product officer at YouEarnIt, myself and Kim Dawson, who was the head of HR there. We did a SHRM certified training session for a bunch of companies about, you know, how to look into doing remote working. And there we got a lot more questions, a lot more like, well, is this actually valuable? How do we make sure people are working? You know, like, because there's a lot of distrust if you've never had people who are remote workers, there's a distrust that, oh, they're just playing with their kids and doing stuff and they're not getting the work done. You know, they're not showing up. There's no chance, you know, and there's this assumption of laziness on the other end of the line. I think that has happened very infrequently. I've been doing this for 15 years. It's been very far and few between that I've encountered anyone who's really been slacking off. I think it's like two people the entire time. And I think a lot of that's just about recruiting the right people, making sure that you have conversations with them and making sure you have the tools in place to check in on them and manage them just like you would staff that's sitting in the office, you know, like, it's easier with software development because often you'll track a lot of the stuff that you're doing. A lot of it's tracked in like Git and Git flow, and you see commits and you see activity. You have a trace of what's happening, you know, and you see the communications happening now. So that tells you there's activity, but then there needs to be also a trust but verify where you check in every once in a while around and make sure that the activity is useful activity, and that it's actually, you know, contributing to the success of the company. But, you know, I think that's the main concern that I hear in these sort of scenarios. But I think when people take a second and listen and to when I talk about this and they think, oh, wait, I do talk to my mom all the time who lives in a different state than me, or I do talk to my prospects that I'm selling to all the time and they live in a different state than me, and I have text and whatever communications with these people that go swimmingly because I bothered to, like, I have relationships with them that fill in the context. And you need to build, we're all humans. You still need to, in a digital distributed context, you still need to build relationships with your coworkers so that you can communicate efficiently. And so that when there are potential gaps or misunderstandings in communication, where you can see, well, we're trying to work for the same thing, so that you see that gap with a positive connotation and that you can reach out to the person and escalate to a more familiar way to communicate, in terms of like vocally or a video chat to actually reach alignment.
Awesome, mate. So we'll shut it down here if that's all right.
Yeah, it's great with me.
So I can't thank you enough for sticking with us. It's been a fascinating learn actually about this subject. So thank you so much for taking the time and sharing this.
Yeah, thank you, Eddie. I appreciate it. It's been a good discussion, and you know, I think I'm very fortunate that I work in an industry and I've worked for leaders like Ben Lamb who understand this and will allow this and see the benefit of bringing in multiple people from multiple places, working collectively, utilizing all the tools we have to succeed.
Absolutely. Well, anyone wanting to learn more about, I suppose, where you're at, the company that you're with at the moment, you know, where is it just hypergiant.com or is it
hypergiant.com? And we have a press page that covers all the stuff that's going on in the press about us. You can also follow us on Instagram and on Twitter. and on LinkedIn. We have lots of news coming all the time. We just had a bunch of news from, like I said earlier, I'm part of Space Age Solutions, but one of our other divisions, Galactic Systems, has been doing a lot of interesting things in space that will probably interest some people. So go check it out.
All right, CJ, you're a legend. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.